cool. It did put it.
I think it's brilliant.
It could be.
If anything, they can incite like a fight between all you guys, and then whoever's
like
left over.
Like Hunger Games.
Exactly.
A fight to the death.
No. Yes. PC Hunger Games.
Yes.
Which while I have that mentioned, I did go with the audiobook. The reader, she isn't that bad.
That's good.
And, well, the book is intriguing, although a little, not really off-putting at times. I hesitate. I think I'm on chapter 8 right now, and I hesitate to say too much that could be a spoiler. But coming off of our conversation last time, I do get the feeling that the author could use a little bit more tact in certain situations.
The author could use more tact, or
yeah.
The main character could use more tact. This is a fine line.
Okay, I just came from George R.R. Martin, where he talks about someone's voice being thunder coated with honey. And then I go over to Hunger
Ooh,
Games,
like
where every other sentence ends with, he said, she said, I said.
The thing is, I have this theory that Susan Collins had a good idea, but really isn't that good of a writer. Like, she can structure a story.
Yeah,
I don't think she writes well.
The story is intriguing, but there's a little bit of phraseology here and there where it's like it's kind of abrupt, and I'm like,
oh yeah,
You know, it kind of fits with. I mean, it's continually that way. She's consistent, so there's some parts I really like, and you know, I can tell I'm really getting into the storyline. So
mm-hmm.
It's a good story.
It's a good story.
I'll be interested to hear what you're at the slowest part of any of the books right now.
Yeah.
Is where you're at right now. So I just went back to look to see exactly where you are. And yeah, the first section of the first book is probably the slowest part. So
that's the best part and the most horrible part for reasons I already discussed.
Okay, yeah, you talked about that already. It's funny you mentioned The Hunger Games in, because after our last recording, I stayed up until 1:45 and finished book 3. That's what
wow.
I did. So, and
nice.
I think it holds true. The first book is probably my favorite, and the other two are they're like a continual story broken into two books. And the trilogy as a whole I like a lot. The last two books I don't like as much as the first one, but as a whole the trilogy works. And I think it'd be a fascinating, like, political, to look at the political leanings of the characters and of the times and how to draw parallels to today and to the past. I think it would be interesting to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I won't get into it too much because neither one of you have read past parts of book one, so I won't.
Yeah.
I will not blow the spoiler horn and then have both of you leave and wax for a while. I'll leave that for later. So, go ahead, Jonas.
Okay. Nope. Not going down this road.
Come on, Jonas. Come on.
I just wish it did a little bit worse in the box office, because it's killing me by quite a lot. Although, to be fair, I gotta say, Wrath of the Titans did better than I expected.
I had extremely low expectations going in, so that's not hard to do.
Yeah. I mean, it hasn't made a ton, but it's made about 60 million.
63.1.
Yeah, which isn't much compared to Hunger Games, like, what, 308?
Yeah.
Or whatever.
312.
Which I know. I think Wrath of the Titans, though, it'll have staying power in the box office. Because it's one of those things like, what do you want to see? Well, I haven't seen this movie yet, and people will go see it. Whereas Hunger Games will hit big right away, and then people won't go see it again.
Yeah.
Or you're hoping that's what happens with Hunger Games.
I'm hoping. I know I don't have a chance. Avengers is going to clean house like no movie ever before.
People keep saying that, and I don't know.
I'm skeptical.
I'm still skeptical on that one.
It has Scarlett Johansson in it. I'm automatically skeptical.
I understand that it's like number 3 or 4 or 2 and there's all these different series, but I don't know if that's necessarily as appealing to me as kind of like it might dilute some of the, I don't know.
Oh, shoot. I had a thought. Oh, have either of you seen the trailer for Looper? Or read anything about it?
I've only seen the poster for Looper.
Okay. Well, the trailer's
I have
on...
a vague idea.
The trailer is on iTunes.com/trailers. The exclusive one was released today. That actually looks kind of interesting to me. That movie.
Who stars in that again?
Joseph Gordon-Levitt and Bruce Willis.
Bruce Willis. That's the other one. Okay. Wait a minute. I assume it said something about somebody's past being someone's future.
Yes.
So is Bruce Willis going to be sent back in time to stop something that happened when he was a kid, and then it turns out that he actually, like, was involved in the event that he witnessed as a kid? Because then they're just going to make 12 Monkeys again.
I don't think that's the premise. I just encourage you to go and... And watch it, the trailer. It's I guess I can give you the basic synopsis. It's essentially Joseph Gordon-Levitt is Bruce Willis in the past, and he's a looper who is an assassin that kills the guys that mobsters from the future sent to the past to have disposed of. And he gets paid tons of money. And so that's like the premise. So there's no time travel in the time of Joseph Gordon-Levitt, but 30 years in the future or whatever, there is. So they send guys back in time, essentially, from the future to get killed so there's no witnesses or anything. So these guys are called loopers, and they're assassins in the past for the future. Anytime you get time travel into things, it just sounds ridiculous when you start saying it.
No, that makes sense.
Oh, Looper like Loop. That now the title makes sense.
Not Looper like Photos.
I'm like
the Looper.
U-L-L what?
No, not quite. So yes, yeah, it looks interesting, and it wasn't one that I had been looking at all, and just kind of through some of the teasers they were sending out, and then through the trailer, it just looks interesting, and Joseph Gordon-Levitt is a funny guy on his own right, and I think a pretty talented actor. He was in Inception, which is a fantastic movie.
He was also in Brick, which yes. I highly recommend. Brick was a good movie. Little bit rough around the edges, but overall very good, I think. Yeah.
Okay, so...
Not Third Rock from the Sun good.
He is good in that, too, so...
Yeah, he is. I can't argue with it. Sorry, Phil.
I just got an email today from... Maybe it was yesterday, from NAB Show, because I'm going to be headed down to NAB next week.
Oh, cool.
And one of the guys from Netflix, Ted Sarandos? Is doing a talk or a session or something, and I don't know if I'm allowed to get in it or not, but some of the cast of Arrested Development is going to be there.
Oh my gosh.
And if
really?
I could,
sweet.
Will Arnett is like
oh,
I could
yeah.
shake his hand. I just want to shake
oh,
his hand.
Oh, yeah. That would be amazing.
If you shake his hand, though, you can never wash your hand again, and that's going to be kind of going to get kind of awkward after a little bit there.
I don't know. I probably want to wash my hand right after shaking his.
Very true. Well played, sir. Well played.
I'm trying to think who's my favorite person in that series, and I don't think I can pick anyone. David Cross is pretty funny.
He's going to be. He's on the list too.
Oh yes. Right now, I suppose my favorite one is. Is it Jessica Walter?
Do, 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 do,
who plays
do, do, do.
the mom.
Oh.
Because she's one of the cast members for Archer. She does one of the voices.
She's in Better Off Ted, isn't she?
Is she?
No, not the mother. Lindsay, the blonde. She's in Better Off Ted.
Yeah, she is. Why can't I think of it?
Find that.
Cool. What time? When are you heading out, Phil, for NAB?
I leave on Saturday from school at noon.
Cool.
So,
how many people are you taking down?
Well, that keeps changing on a day-to-day basis. So,
oh, really?
Yeah. In theory, there's like 5 or 6. It might just be 5.
Okay. That's a good number.
I have a question, Phil, about NAB. What is it?
Well, I'm glad
you asked. I seriously don't know.
Here we go.
NAB stands for National Association of Broadcasters, and it is a conference that takes place in Las Vegas every year, because that's basically the only place on the planet that can hold that many people at one time. April 14th to 19th this year. And it's all for broadcasting people. There's a bunch of different breakout sessions. There's different tracks. It's very confusing when you're trying to figure out what's going on, because there's every company is there on the show floor, and the show floor takes up 3 buildings that you can't really see from one end to the other, and then one of those buildings is 2 stories.
So we
walk for hours through all these different booths. They got Sony and Avid and Canon and Panasonic. So huge booths of people. There's like 100,000 people just wandering around looking at stuff. You can see all the new cameras they're announcing and everything. And then on top of that, half these places have parties in the evening at different hotels or places. And then there's sessions throughout the day that you can go to. Some of them cost money. Some are... our passes will get us into. Most of the stuff you have to register ahead of time and with your pass. And then there's also a Broadcasters Education Association, BEA, conference. It goes on kind of next door, and they have a bunch of stuff going on. I found out Kevin Sorbo is going to be at a faith and film convention.
Kevin Sorbo.
Interesting.
Yeah.
It's going to be... I don't know which 90s series I would want to talk to him more about. Andromeda or Hercules?
Yeah.
Take your pick.
So I'm hoping I can get in and see him. And then I don't remember the guy's name, but the dad from Psych, the TV show, he's going to be at that too.
Yeah.
And
I can't remember it.
James Cameron's doing a talk sometime there, and... So, I mean, there's a lot of people. He's doing some talk about turning Titanic to 3D or something like that and some other things.
Yeah. I was really upset because, people were wondering, they're like getting upset, why do we need a 3D re-release of Titanic? And I'm just like, I'm pretty sure it's April 19th, right? 1912?
Yeah, it's the 100-year anniversary.
It's the 100th year anniversary of the sinking. I don't remember what day it was. I just know it was April.
I think it was the 12th, actually. I think that was the point.
Well, April 12th,
the Facebook statuses yesterday, or a couple days ago, were all about it launching.
Let's see. So it sank on the 15th of April. It launched on the 12th, I think. Sank on the 15th.
Sank on the morning. I think it hit. Didn't it hit at night? And
let's figure this out. Wikipedia to the rescue.
Oh,
so his maiden voyage was the 10th. And then it struck the iceberg on the 14th.
April 15th.
And it sank in the morning on the 15th.
Oh, man. I'm going to have a little Titanic...
party?
Memorial, yeah. I'll make salads from iceberg lettuce.
You saw the... over Twitter, you saw the picture of the statuses from people who were just finding out for the first time what the Titanic was real, right?
What?
Yeah, I know. I was captivated and frightened.
This is why we can't have movies based off of true events.
No, this is why we can't have nice things, period.
Yes.
Because people don't know about landmark events.
That is very sad.
I mean, I know there were, I'm sure there have been, you know, there are a lot of significant ships that have sunk, you know, like the Bismarck, the Mary Rose.
Lusitania.
Lusitania, of course. I guess, what is it, the Edmund Fitzgerald?
Yep.
Yep.
Or whatever that
cool.
Great Lakes one is. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then the Arizona, or not the Arizona, the, what was the one that got torpedoed that had the A-bomb on it? The Arizona got destroyed and docked.
Wasn't it the Indiana?
Yeah, I think it was the Indiana, or the Indianapolis.
It might be one of those two. I'm looking at
whatever
list of maritime disasters.
But the thing is, none of those are idioms for something going wrong.
True. That's very true. That one is it.
Man,
it's the name coupled with the declaration of being. It is Indianapolis, by the way, USS Indianapolis.
Okay.
It was a heavy cruiser. Coupled with the declaration that it was virtually unsinkable, you know, all those things kind of work to make the Titanic a huge deal.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, and it was the biggest, like, ship, passenger ship of its time. Yeah. I don't know if, well, I have no idea where modern cruise ships.
They're bigger. And the accommodations are much nicer.
Yeah. Until someone tips it over on the coast of Italy.
Well, it was Italy, after all.
Which, I had an idea with one of my coworkers. We need to invent, I don't know if these things really exist, but on some TV shows like Castle, they have the things where, like, the spycation or the spy vacation where you kind of are a spy,
mm-hmm,
type thing. Or they do the workcations or work vacations where they swap jobs for a week or something like that. And there's all these things. We need to have, like, a cruise, but it's a disaster cruise. So you got to, like, sign the waiver. If anything happens to you, you won't sue them. And you don't know if you're going to, like, tip over or if you're going to hit an iceberg or if you're going to get attacked by pirates. But you just go on this cruise and, like maybe day three, as soon as there's no land in sight and suddenly there's no crew and there's no captain on the ship. Everyone's just gone. And everyone's like, okay, now what? You know? And just kind of, you know, pay to live through that experience.
I feel like that would end in cannibalism.
It might.
One could only hope.
Like, it would be Lord of the Flies in no time. The second people can't have internet, it'll go straight back to the Stone Age. Now, forget going back 20 years. We're just going all the way back. Although, the idea of finding a cruise, like the Coast Guard finding a cruise ship that's just full of cavemen, is somewhat appealing to me. Like that.
I guess they could do like
over a hut.
They could do like a double thing, because they could do the disaster vacation cruise ship, and then you could do you are the squad who is infiltrating that ship, trying to find survivors.
Ooh.
Hmm.
So then you could descend upon the cannibalism and try to pick out those who are still sane from those who are not.
Well, you could just do the same thing with that, dressed up as an Israeli commando, accidentally shoot some people.
Yes.
I remember when that was a huge deal for 2 days, 2 years ago or whenever that was. I can't even remember. Like, everybody thought it was going to spark a war in the Middle East, and I'm like, meh.
Yep.
Hmm.
Cool. So, Phil, I saw that you
I
have
just brought
some
down
questions
the discussion
for us.
With the Middle East.
I was just going to say kittens.
Yes.
Kittens. That's right.
They're fluffy sometimes, except when they're not.
They're delightful.
They leave hair everywhere.
It's true.
Ugh.
They are small, though, so you can fit them in pockets and in small carry-ons.
Mm.
Which can be useful if you're trying to smuggle them through the TSA.
That's very true.
Yeah, that's about
oh,
it.
They are adorable.
It's true. True. What color kittens
like
do you like?
They're just in general?
Yeah, what color kitten? And if you had to choose a color for your kitten, what color would your kitten be?
I think I rather like calico cats.
Ah. Man after my own
heart. I think I do. Yeah.
I agree. I like the calico. I like the multicolored. If I have to choose like a solid color, though, I like the gray. I'm a fan of the gray.
Gray cats.
Yeah.
Black cats are good, too.
Yeah.
Especially if you have a lot of them and can scare people. It's one of the best.
Or if you're a witch.
Indeed.
How would you tell if a person's a witch or not? Come on, Jonas. You don't want to.
She floats.
Wait, as much as a duck.
Oh, man.
I was watching a video by John Cleese this past week, and it was about creativity.
You tweeted about it.
I did, and I also blogged about it. And it was phenomenal, actually. It was a great... He told jokes during it, which I always find I'm always appreciative of, because John Cleese is hilarious. But the whole premise was... This was back in the early 90s when this was taken. And the whole premise was that creativity isn't an innate... It isn't a skill you either have or you don't, but it's something that you have to work to achieve. And so he was talking about, amongst all the how many does it take to screw in a light bulb jokes, he was talking about the five things it takes for a person to be creative. The first one was space. Second one was time. The third one was time. The fourth one was confidence. And the last one was humor. Those are the five things. And the space is a separate area. So something apart or a way to separate your thoughts from the current, the everyday grind of what you're doing. The first time is just time to get yourself prepared. And then the second one is time to actually be creative. And his thing was a half an hour just to get yourself out of it and into a creative mode. And then an hour and a half of time just to think and to set limits as far as how much time you're going to use. The confidence is the confidence to be stupid and make mistakes. He didn't say be stupid, but to just know that you... During this time, you can't really do anything wrong. So every idea is on the table. And then the last part is humor, because it's the easiest way to just go from a closed, working, goal-oriented state to an open, creative, taking-in-everything state. Humor is the easiest way to switch those things. And he, of course, has a lot more to expound upon. But those are the five things. And then he spoke about how to be a productive person, you have to be able to switch between the closed working, I've made a decision, now these are what I have to do, and the open state of being creative and taking in things and not just being so goal-oriented. It was funny because he talked about, I'm going to get this wrong, person who found penicillin or created it or whatever, and how
Alexander Fleming.
Thank you, Fleming. Yeah, and how he was just trying to grow cultures in a petri dish, and he had a bunch of petri dishes with cultures in them, and one of them didn't have any cultures. You know, a person who's in the closed state is going to say that petri dish is worthless because I was working on this task, so he'll just disregard it. But if you're open to thinking outside of just the task at hand, you then you get the question of, well, what happened, And then that leads you down a path of more questions. That was his example. And, you know, it's kind of cliched and kind of convoluted to an extent. But the idea of you, in an open state, you're more likely to question anomalies. Whereas in a closed state, you'll see anomalies as impediments to progress more than anything else. And how important it is for both of those states and to switch between the two for every person who's trying to get something accomplished.
One of the classes I had to take, or I took in college, was for set design, mm-hmm. For theater set design. And we had to read a book, Whack on the Side of the Head. And it's basically a book on creativity and how to be creative. But that's one of the things, the key points that came across in that book as well, is that sometimes you just have to see things from a slightly different angle. You just need someone to whack you on the side of the head and you say, oh, wait. You know, and I actually had that happen to me a couple times where it was like I was working on a programming problem or something.
Mm-hmm.
And I had, like, how do I solve this problem? And I start explaining it out loud to someone, and then it hits me, oh, wait, if I don't give the user an option for that, I don't have to solve that problem. You know, you just got to look at things at a slightly different viewpoint,
yeah.
And your problem goes away. But along those same lines, we had someone come visit our campus to talk about, he's a graphic visual effects artist or works in the field.
Okay.
And that's something he said he wakes up every morning at like really early, at like 4 or 4:30, and he walks a dog and he sets aside like a good half hour for himself to just sit and do nothing, because it's very hard to continually be creative and continually do this type of work if you don't just like completely let yourself relax and get out of this hustle bustle and problems of everyday life.
See, for me, like the flip side is I enjoy walking to work because that buffer area allows me to kind of switch between the modes that I'm going between. And sometimes I'll get up and just take a walk around campus if I've been really focused and I need to start like designing something. I'll have to get up and just kind of get myself reoriented around the problem or just let my mind essentially do what it wants for a little bit instead of trying to corral it into a certain task, but let it wander a little bit and kind of stretch its legs. So, you know, both times you kind of have to have transition periods. You can't just switch it like a light switch. Even though that's what, you know, that it'd be nice if you could. It'd be nice if you could just throw a switch and be done.
Huh. I think that's completely and totally accurate.
Sound
advice.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sound advice from John Cleese, who I now think may be a giant cat.
Could be. I don't really know how that. There was no segue here.
I guess this is my creativity. I've seen outside the problem of him just simply being a silly human who is fun to watch. And does fun things. If we step outside the box, which he's probably playing in,
if
we
he's
realize
a cat, probably.
That he is a cat. He is a big, mustached cat. That was in a very successful British comedy show, and like two Bond movies or three Bond movies. John Cleese is a cat.
I think that might be the name of the podcast. John Cleese is a cat. One of the other things he talked about...
That'd make me happy.
One of the other things he talked about was in response to meetings. And I don't know how many meetings you guys have to attend.
Not enough.
Too many on this end.
I'll trade you.
But he spoke how, you know... So often, meetings are seen as quote-unquote serious, like, endeavors. And this goes for any kind of serious thing. And as, I think, are we all at least part German, all three of us?
Why not?
in our history?
Yeah, I'm mostly German.
Okay, same here. We'll just go with it. You know, the serious, our serious nature, you know, how serious we are about things. And but he said, you know, there's a difference between serious and solemnity, like being solemn about things. And you can be funny and still be serious and use humor and still be serious about what you're talking about. But that humor can act as a way of keeping things moving ahead and trying to keep people in that open, you know, that receptive mode. Because what is it? Humor lets people's guard down to an extent. You know, they become more receptive to things if they're laughing or if mm-hmm. if they're in that mood. And I think we've all seen that. So using humor in a serious, quote-unquote serious setting, you know, could have benefits depending upon the situation or what you're trying to accomplish. But the pervasiveness of serious equaling a solemn attitude toward everything that's going on, you know, that's kind of can be counterproductive, because solemn is as close as you can get, essentially. If you're a solemn person, you're not really that receptive to much of anything besides maybe food. So
yeah,
that was his other little thing. And I thought that was interesting, because I'd always, you know, you go to a meeting, you're being serious, but that doesn't mean you have to be like no humor, like humorless or still or stiff, I guess would be another word to use like that. You could still be, you know, throw some jokes around, make sure people are a little loose. I guess that's a good thing mm-hmm. for talks too. The conferences I'm at all the time, you're sitting there. The ones that I'm the most engaged in as far as talks go are the people who, you know, are willing to throw the jokes out there or make you think by phrasing things a little differently in order to keep you off balance a little bit, because it keeps your mind kind of active and engaged and at odds with itself, so you think things through a little bit more. Open with a joke, yep. And make sure it's at least somewhat relatable and funny and doesn't offend the audience.
You know, I think it's very interesting, because people, I feel like they get this way with a lot of things, like creativity and how sharp of a wit you have and all sorts of stuff, where people just are like, oh, that person is this way. Like, they are,
yeah,
you know, they are creative, or they have a quick wit. But the thing is, I mean, these are buildable traits. Like, you can grow in any of these things by exposing yourself to more of it.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, the more, just like, well, like stage acting or any acting is the same way. If you do more of it, you get more in the zone. And it's just one of those things that I think a lot of people never consider that they could actually cultivate in themselves.
Yeah. Since I have two kids, I tend to read a little bit more about parenting styles and stuff. And one recommendation I give is don't read anything about parenting styles, because it's all junk. The whole of it. It's a whole bunch of junk. Just don't read it. When you have kids, raise your kids the way you want, because anything else is going to be a farce the way it is. But one piece of advice that it wasn't really a piece of advice, but it made me think. That's probably the best thing this stuff can do is, and I remember from school and growing up, what people always said, the phrase they use is, oh, you're so fill in the blank, you know, oh, you're so athletic, oh, you're so, in the context here, creative, oh, you're so smart,
silly,
oh, you're so silly, or you're exactly, yeah, you can take it to the other end, but, you know, you're so funny, you're so, you know, you are blank. It was phrased, instead of that thing you did is this, you know, you are naughty, instead of, you know, there's a subtle difference between applying an attribute to a person that might not be true, or it might be true or not, and saying that the task that they just did or the action they just performed has these properties attached to it, you know, like. good job. The example they were talking mostly about grades and how, you know, the idea of you are smart does a couple of things. You know, it number one, it sets a hierarchy within the class. And number two, it sets up that student for in the future, if they don't do well, then they automatically think I'm stupid because I was smart before, but now I don't get it. So now I'm dumb, you know? So they flip that switch.
Hmm.
Instead of, you know, nice work on this paper, you did a lot, you did good work. Well, then, you know, it becomes, if they run into issues, it's not that they're stupid, it's that they just don't get it yet. Like, they still have work to do. And then this gets into educational philosophies about, you know, self-paced learning and some of the stuff that Khan Academy has looked into. And if I can find the link to the Khan Academy TED Talk about learning styles and how it was amazing to look at this graph of like 30 or 40 students all taking the same curriculum but at their own pace, and how almost every single time you saw them, students progress, then they would plateau on one subject. But as soon as they got out of that subject, they would skyrocket and catch up with everyone else. But it was always a different, subject or a different topic that each individual student would plateau on, or there were multiple ones along the way. But it was almost always followed by this huge upswing of activity and progress. Where, what do you consider that student? You know, if you would have seen him in the plateau stage, you would have said that student is dumb. You know, you would have said things like that, because traditionally, if you don't progress fast enough, you know, you're considered stupid. Whereas those who are in maybe just one of those curves would be gifted, but then they hit that roadblock and then they're discouraged because all of a sudden, well, I was smart, but now what happened? And they're saying how, you know, self-paced learning, it doesn't leave people behind. It allows people to actually move through things faster because they get to spend the time on the concepts that they need, and then they can move fast through the ones that they don't need help with, or that they understand them because the foundations have been set up.
Hmm.
And, you know, it's all interrelated, and we have a whole society full of people with not a self-esteem issues, but like ego issues, as far as they think that they can do anything, or that everything, you know, good should happen to them because that's what they were promised in grade school. And that's coming back to haunt us in different ways. And I do a lot of reading, so yeah, I read a lot of crazy stuff.
No, that's definitely true. We are, having that kind of issue, especially with this current generation, I think of 80s and 90s kids.
Those of us on Transformers
kind of expect. Well, I mean, you get raised being told that you're a special individual, and then when you can't, you know, when you're thinking,
might be
more of a round peg, and what they want you to do is a square hole, then it's.
I'm going to call giant conspiracy theory here.
Ooh, yes.
Uh-oh.
Go, Phil.
This education system and this way of getting people to think they're better than they are has been the plan of the TV industry for a couple decades now in order to work their way up to American Idol.
Hmm.
That's true. We do have an unlimited supply of
contestants.
They're like, and then you think you can dance and all the other shows that go along. They're like, how can we... This is an idea, but no one is this vain yet. How can we make them vain?
That's true. Very interesting.
That is actually, that's quite profound.
I just made that up.
That's great. Well, you know what? You're in the open mode, so you're thinking outside the box is what's going on.
I'm so creative.
Phil, you are creative. Instead of that thought you just had, has qualities that might be considered creative.
This makes sense, because John Cleese would be immune to these things because he's a cat.
Now we're really coming around. All the pieces are falling in place.
I'm liking this. I'm liking this. Just throwing science at the wall and seeing what sticks.
Sometimes you just got to start like that. to head back to what Jonas was saying, though, you know, I mean, I remember, you know, the promise was you go to college and everything else comes after. Really? Like, that was it, right? You go, if you go to college and get a degree, a degree, any degree, then we have everything else waiting for you at the other side of the tunnel. Just
Don't worry about that $50,000 worth of debt. You'll be able to work it off with the job you have.
Exactly. Just make sure you stay in line, color within the lines. You know, don't try and rock the boat too much, and everything will be okay. And that is the biggest lie that was told to us from early on.
Yeah, I kind of blame, like, late 80s, early 90s TV, where, like, everyone, you know, you got to go to college. It's
Oh, yeah, all those shows that we watched growing up, it was, what was the big decision they made at the end of, like, at the end of the season? It was, where am I going to college?
Well, yeah, and I mean, but more than that, you get situations where people, like, were encouraged to go to college just no matter what. It's like, what, this is what you should do. Eric from Boy Meets World, the older brother, he struggled constantly, yet, like, he was completely shoehorned, if that's a term. Yeah, I think
it's, yeah, it is.
He was into going to college in the end. So I think this leads to just a saturation of college degrees, is, you know, the growth of big college and all this, you know, this whole economy that's been built around getting people through school, and then the economy that isn't ready for them later. So really we can blame the economy on Mr. Feeney.
I love Mr. Feeney.
Who looks a bit like John Cleese with the mustache.
A bit.
You can't deny he's a shorter, fatter.
Not quite as funny, John Cleese.
John Cleese. I wonder what he's doing these days.
I don't know. I thought he had died, but I usually think a lot of people that I don't hear from have died, so.
I remember that card I got when I stopped talking to you for a week.
Yeah, I sent it to your parents. Sorry for your loss. But yeah, we worked it out in the end. It was fine.
Yeah, it was all good.
Besides the casket and the... It's all waiting for you. It's fine.
A little bit. Trigger happy.
I do. That tends to happen. That tends to happen. So, yeah. College is kind of, that's one of the touchy subjects with me, because even though I am still in the college system technically, and you know, Phil understands this too, but you know, a lot of the shine of college when you're in high school, for me at least, was worn off while I attended college. And it wasn't even like the classes or the people or the professors or anything. It was like the institution and what the realities of the world outside, you know, past your education are that I was opened up to, that kind of wore off that shine for me. And
well, you know, and I imagine it was a little bit even worse for you, Bob, than a lot of people, just with the kind of closed Wells circuit sort of thing, where it's like you'll get your degree and then we'll have a job for you, pretty much, and then there weren't.
Yeah, and that. I chose a different route pretty. Pretty quickly.
Well, yeah, but I mean, look at it. All three of us, I mean, you guys' current job and my previous job experience could all have been done with like a 2-year tech degree.
Yep.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's just, I don't see why so many people hear people saying that that's like, that's not enough.
Yeah,
get a liberal arts degree, and that's like, that's not worth anything.
It's not enough either. Like, there's to a point where, you know, it's diminishing returns as far as your investment goes. You know, and you'll hear a lot about there's other benefits to attending college. You know, the social scene, getting out on your own for the first time. And I won't deny the fact that for a lot of people, those are benefits. I won't deny that. But I think there are also a group of people that are better served by not getting that four-year degree. But sadly, there's then a stigma attached currently within all of education that if you don't have a four-year degree, then you are somehow a lesser being and, you know, gets back to what are you and not, you know, what have you done, your work experience. And so, because whenever I think back, if I would go back, you know, it's fun to think, if you could go back to you in high school, what would you say? Number one, I'd say, Bob, it doesn't matter. And then number two, it just doesn't matter.
That just ruined his day. Hey, past me. It doesn't matter. None of it matters.
Meaningless. Like, honestly, read it. take it to heart. But, and then I would honestly, like, say, just think about getting a two-year degree in something that you actually want to do. You know? Start there, because honestly, you can always go back.
Yeah.
You really can. But getting a base of knowledge into something you want to do to the point where you can actually live doing that thing, I think getting started, getting some experience outside of academics then, because you've been in school then for me it was 14 straight years from preschool to graduating from high school. And then, you know, so 16 straight years to get an associate's degree. You've been in a classroom of some sort, not in the real world, you know, with no responsibility besides showing up for class and not sleeping most of the time. You know, that's been the extent of your responsibility for 16 straight years. You know, getting an associate's degree and then getting out there and getting some experience so you know you have a better idea, this is what I want to do without the $50,000 worth of debt. Would be great.
Well, right. Yeah.
Two things keep popping along in my mind as we continue to talk about this. And the one is that,
long
you know,
as
there's
not
a
cats.
No, they're neither cats.
Awesome.
The John Cleese.
John okay, Cleese so the on three things that keep popping along in my mind. Well, I remember reading that article sometime last year where is the David Rowe or whatever from Dirty
yes.
Jobs
yes.
was talking about how we don't have
Mike.
People to do all. He's talking to Congress and he's like, we don't have these people anymore to do to do these things. And you know, those aren't the type of things you usually need to go to college for. It's you need to find an apprentice, a Mike Rowe, sorry, and you know, do an apprenticeship.
Yeah.
And that's totally, you know, the way things could go. And I don't remember what the second thing was. Something about...
I think just the he might have talked a little bit about the stigma attached to those quote-unquote lesser jobs, the dirty jobs that he goes to.
Mm-hmm.
And how, like, they make... Or maybe this is from his show, actually. But, like, those jobs are the foundation upon which all of the white-collar jobs and, you know, our standard of living is built on top of. And I'm too close to be unbiased because I have a dad who works the soil and was a janitor at the school I attended when I was in grade school. And so to an extent, I mean, I grew up dealing with poop a lot. And so, you know, I understand a little bit about what he's saying, and I've felt in the past a little bit that, you know, he was looked down upon by some people that he would try and deal with. But there's always stigma attached to things because we're creatures who build assumptions and our frameworks of reference are so informed by what society views as normal and what's good that in order to try and make sense of anything, we have to like use those frameworks of references. Otherwise, we just can't even make sense of what the world's trying to do for us. But that is a great video.
He's such a talented
speaker, and he sang opera. The guy is just kind of cool.
I remember that video because he calls for a PR campaign. He wants people to actively be, you know, building the idea that these jobs are good jobs. I think, you know, America's wealth is still just, it's just a, I guess it's more or less a propagation of fortunate circumstances for us in the 1940s and the 1950s, largely. Mm-hmm. Use that to our advantage, and, you know, in the 60s, 70s, 80s, whatever. And now things are starting, I think, to level out. The fact of the matter is, like, we just got a generational gap. I don't know how it happened, but, you know, the people, how we made money and built our economy in the 50s was from, you know, people being mechanics and factory workers and...
Well, and we exported, you know, everything because everyone else was destroyed.
Right. Exactly. This was the foundation of this country, and now you've got a ton of people graduating. Like, they get this idea in their head that there's some super posh job out there that they can go through 4 years of a liberal arts education and just with the goal of finding a job that doesn't feel like work. And that's not going to happen. No matter where you are, if you don't have your mind straight to be at work, you're going to hate what you do, no matter what the job is.
Yep.
You will become cynical, and it is just a cycle that can produce nothing. And that's, I think people need, I don't want to tell people to lower their expectations, because that's not what I'm saying.
I think it's a sense of realism, like understanding that life is not all roses. Well, some people don't like roses, but you understand what I'm saying. Like, there's going to be difficulties you have to deal with, and it's more on how you view those is where you get the people who, you know, love what they do and those who loathe what they do. It's how you view those difficulties and the attitude you take into there more than, well, there's nothing wrong with this job, or there's nothing difficult about what I'm doing in life. It's like, well, that's a farce. That's so not true. There are things, but to you, like, they're so minor, they don't. To that person, those things are so minor that they don't overshadow, like, the love they have for the rest of the job.
Right.
And for some people, like, those things bubble up and they just build over time, and if they're not handled, then it becomes an issue.
Yeah. And, I mean, it doesn't help when you're told, like, at a young age that if you don't, you know, a job that doesn't require college isn't,
yeah,
you know, that's not a good job. I mean, with that kind of mind frame, who wouldn't, like, it gets this idea that people would be settling, and that they don't like manual labor jobs because they're now settling.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have the job that they think everyone else has. And that's total crap. I mean, work with your hands if you can.
I'll put a book link in the show notes, but it's a book called Shop Class and Soulcraft, I think. I read it while I was actually training in California with Apple. But it's all about
white-collar devil, you.
That's fine. That's
just
fine.
Kidding.
You can say that, but it's all
I'm
about.
Just kidding.
It's all about a guy who he had like a pot. I think he worked actually on Wall Street or something, and what happened was he decided that, or he worked in some white collar job, like knowledge worker, you know, sit in an office all day, and no hardship, you know, didn't work with his hands and everything. And he gave that up to work with motorcycles. And it's all about like why he did it and the sort of the benefits he has, you know. And here's this guy who had the wore the two-piece suit to work every day, and then he owns this grungy independent motorcycle repair shop now. And he couldn't be happier because, you know, the important thing to him was working with his hands. And there's still hardships and stuff he hates about it, you know. And but the focus for him is the fact that he now is closer to, quote unquote, closer to the metal as far as working with the motorcycles. And, you know, that's where he derives his joy from that job. And
now, I just finished reading Reality is Broken. I don't remember who wrote it.
That is on my list.
But it's one of the interesting things I got out of that is, again, with hard work, people actually enjoy doing hard work. They don't mind doing repetitious tasks, but they have to feel like they're really getting something out of it. Like the number of hours that people have put into World of Warcraft and into Minecraft, they're doing something that's, you know, very tedious, very meaningless. They're just digging for hours and hours, but they feel like they're making progress, and that makes them feel good. And I think what some people don't realize is that in a lot of these jobs where you don't, like, it doesn't feel like you're, like, I think just a lot of jobs in general, just you don't get the feedback to make it feel like you're making progress.
Yeah.
Like, the only time you get feedback is if something doesn't goes wrong. And there's no, there's, I mean, you do all these things on your to-do list, but there's still more there, and you don't feel like you're making any progress.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, some of it is, and, you know, I've done very few jobs like assembly line or hard labor work, but I mean, like when I had was building houses with my uncle, I mean, that was really tiring hard work. I don't think I would want to be doing that every day, but in some ways it felt good to like come back the next day and see, oh hey, we finished putting up the walls yesterday, you know. There was actually some feedback,
progress, like the visual progress, you know. Some of the fun things for me is working in harvest with my dad and my brother on the farm. And, you know, I get sweaty, it's dusty, you know, you don't get to see it dusty, don't have air conditioning in the cab of the tractor. And granted, it's not nearly as manual as it was before, but at the end of the day, after all of it's said and done, you look and you see, hey, half this field is gone. You know, it's like I was a part of taking out half of this field, and we'll come back and do the same darn thing tomorrow, but we will finish this job. And at the end, you see an empty field. That is your progress bar. Or, you know, in when you're working in the garden and you see, I have now planted things, or I've weeded things. You know, there's like little things like that. It's the progress. Instead of getting an email in my inbox that says, wow, that was really fast. Well, I don't care if it was really fast. I want to know if I did it right, or if it was good, or like what value I've created by doing this one thing. But honestly, what value have I created? Like, is there any value? You know, you get to that point sometimes with these virtual things that you sometimes need to go back. So, Phil, I think I found the author of that. It's a Jane McGonigal, I think is her name. Reality is Broken. You can get it for your Kindle.
I did. I want to say I sent you a version for Kindle.
You did. I have it on my iPad.
Good, good.
So I'm about to... It's on my list of things to read.
And there will be links for both those shows or books in the show notes.
Yeah.
That's
just like... That was good.
Yeah. I mean, well, what you guys were talking about with progress, I think that's ultimately what everybody wants from a job, and that's that exact type of thing is what we put into our free time, and that's one of the reasons that like RPG games are so popular. There's always like a progression. You feel like you're accomplishing things and whatnot, and that is, I guess, no matter what you do for work or what you decide to do as your future. I mean, first of all, people's futures never turn turn out the way they think they will.
Not even
I mean, for
close.
Starters. And they may turn out better, they may turn out worse. They
yeah, it might be neutral. You know,
may turn out just, the same, just taking a side road. You know, but ultimately, you can like or dislike the work you do, but hating your job is a decision you'll make. You can let yourself, you have some control over whether or not you hate the work.
Yeah.
And I think that's where you let it, you stop trying to be okay with it, and you just let it take over your life. And that's what's really the, it's just the ironic thing. People dislike their jobs to the point that they let themselves, they stop caring and let themselves hate it. And in that way, their job destroys their life.
Yep.
So they let the job destroy their life because they think it's worthless to them, which, when in fact, that makes it detrimental. Yeah. Maybe that isn't irony, but
it's a literary figure. It's one of those things, I
just think it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. Maybe that's a better term than irony. But the decision to hate your job is your decision to hate the job. You dislike it, doesn't mean you have to hate it.
Yeah, or let it ruin, you know, the other parts of your life too.
Right. That's where I think the line of hate is, when it starts ruining, when it bleeds past.
Yep.
Its boundaries. Yep.
Wow. That turned into quite the discussion.
Yeah.
So I hope this job I'm interviewing for doesn't suck, huh? thanks for giving me some food for thought.
Don't worry, you can always go back to John Cleese the cat if you want to.
John, yeah, writing books. Millions of John Cleeses.
Ken has cheeseburger. That'd be an interesting place with a whole bunch of LOL John Cleese picks.
Yeah, I'm just going to slowly insert him into everything cat-related.
Just have him photobomb most of the pictures. That'd be pretty good. All right.
Start out with children's books. John Cleese in a hat.
If you give a John Cleese a cookie.
What? That's a mouse.
That's true, but mice and cats, they're related via the circle of life.
When the John Cleese is away, the mice will play.
It's true. You could do. The hard part is like when you get to comic strips, because you have Garfield and Heathcliff, but they would just be John Cleese. And
this explains why he had the dead parrot in that one Monty Python skit. He killed it and tried to eat it.
That's true. He was probably sorely disappointed when he found out that it was plastic.
Yeah, probably. He hides it well.
He's a very talented cat. We can't deny that part.
He is, unquestionably.
So, all right, well, I guess we'll, one thing, we do have to make one correction, and this comes direct from Matthias Lyrer.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Otto's no longer has honey butter.
So don't bother going there.
So don't.
No,
Phil's recommendation.
we're gonna have to drop that one star on our list.
It's true. It's like, only going to be worth one and a half stars now.
It was extremely disappointing to me to find that out today. I mean, I still
think they have good
still
food.
Good.
But still the disappointment level, a notch higher.
Yeah.
But we thought we would set the record straight so we wouldn't be held responsible for anyone coming dying of honey butter thirst
and not
having their thirst quenched.
Oh. Good, we got that all cleared up.
Yeah, I feel better. I feel like a weight's lifted off my shoulders, which is a lie, but I still feel better about it.
And are we saying anything about next week?
Oh, I think I will be driving between this house and another house in Milwaukee.
I'm probably going to be on a plane.
So unless Jonas is going to record himself solo, which is possible, we're probably going to skip next week.
I'm going to read through the Cat in the Hat, inserting John Cleese.
John Cleese in a hat. Actually, that's not a bad idea. So yeah, we're going to skip next week, more than likely, unless Jonas provides us with some material, which is always possible. So we're sorry to disappoint.
Yeah, I'll do my one-man show.
Well, you can call up Matthias.
You guys could do a podcast. That would be great. Oh.
That would be an hour of us arguing over, like, the state of the Federal Reserve, Ron Paul, and the role of government in daily life.
It's true, it would be.
It would, oh man.
Will you really get through all of those topics in an hour?
I don't think so.
Oh, I was with my family this past weekend, Sunday through Wednesday, and it was a lot of fun, but there were some late night arguments between me and Ty about politics. Because, you know, why not? Family get together. Why not yell at each other over politics?
It's the best thing to do.
Even though I'm like the most passive person in the world when it comes to politics. I'm
going to just go out on a limb here, and I think Ty would agree. I don't think it's you, Jonas.
Yeah, well, okay.
Don't think it's in this case.
If we have a confined topic, maybe I'll...
macaroni and cheese. We'll start with that.
That would be a great one. Macaroni and cheese.
We'll expand from
there.
That
actually would be. Yeah, I'd like to see where that line of thought goes.
I definitely have some. There is a hierarchy of macaroni and cheese. I'm a big
probably
fan of
Ron Paul.
Big fan of the Hy-Vee, actually. For some reason, I don't know why. Okay, all right.
But
so getting
the cheesiest.
Let's do a complete 180 now.
Okay. Yep.
Or a 720, or whatever the new Xbox will be. And do we have any picks for the week? Because I actually do have a pick for the week that I would like to give a shout out to something cool.
Go for it, Bob.
Do it.
All right, I'll start at least. So I'm a huge notebook fan. I usually carry one around with me during the day, and it's really cool. And they released as part of their colors, or I should say, the one that I use is Field Notes is the one that I use. And today they announced, I gotta find it here, a new line of notebooks, and I'm not finding it. No, darn it. Field Note Colors. And it's called the National Crops Edition. And the whole idea is it takes the main crops from around the U.S., corn, soybeans, hay, wheat, cotton, and sorghum, and they have a notebook of a different texture and different color for each one of those. And they sell them in a box set. I'll put the... Oh, it's crop, not crops. Okay, I'll put the... It's fieldnotesbrand.com/crop. And they sell them in a box set of six. It's just kind of cool. They've had other ones like the State Fair edition where it'll have multicolored notebooks for each state, along with information. It's really cool. They're definitely luxury items because they're just notebooks, so it's really, you don't have to spend this much on them by any means. But they're kind of cool because they harken back to Field Notes, which were advertisements handed out to farmers back in the past decades. And they had things like calculation tables for fertilizer and seed and stuff inside of it, along with place for notes, a mini almanac so you could see when things were supposed to happen, and a whole lot of other stuff depending on who it was. And these harken back to that time. They're around the same size, And they have a video, which I'll warn is a little vulgar, about called From Seed, which goes back to how the big collection of Field Notes notebooks that this guy has. And it's kind of fun to look at all the different ones that he has. But notably, he is kind of vulgar, so just to be aware. So that's my pick for the week. That just came out today, and I thought it was cool because I remember my great-grandpa having all those Field Notes in his house because he sold seed. So harkens back to when I was a little bit younger and a whole lot better looking. That's it. Either one of you guys have anything?
I think you're handsome.
Well, thank you, Jonas. I think you're handsome as well.
All right.
And Phil?
So where do we go from here?
I'm just going to say, as soon as we're done recording here, I have a bowl of guacamole and chips sitting next to me. I've been drooling over for the past 45 minutes. And so my pick of the week is going to be guacamole. If you haven't had any lately, go get some.
That poor, poor, poor keyboard.
Oh, man.
That was good. All right.
Okay, so we've had program and food. I'm not sure what my... I don't know.
That's right.
What could be more different from that. The sun? I guess my pick for the week is the sun. Pretty cool.
It's a good pick. Good pick. I like it.
The planet.
Big fan of the sun. I've used it a little bit myself in the past.
Yeah.
It's good for turning your skin colors.
The only different thing I've been doing this week is I've been playing...
gives you melanoma?
Yeah. I've been playing Yahtzee, Ben Yahtzee, quote marks, Croshaw, the writer of Zero Punctuation on The Escapist. I've been playing his new game that he released for free last week called Poacher.
Did he give it a good score, or did he tear it apart as well?
Well, of course he didn't review it, because it's just like a little, 16-bit-ish game. It's a platformer. He had another game. This one I'm not... It's okay. I'm not thrilled with it. I mean, good writing, good design, I think. I'm just not huge on this kind of platformer. He had a different game that he made years back called... Trilby, The Art of Theft, which was a stealth game. That game's awesome. It's so much fun to just sneak around in games. So, it's a two-parter pick this week. Poacher and The Sun.
And that melanoma-inducing glorious gas giant ball in the sky.
Hail Ra, Lord of the Sky.
There we go. All right. Well, unless there's nothing else, this is the end of episode 12, I believe. Wow. Very nice. So, remember, 2 weeks until the next episode, and we will see you then. Boom.